Live from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia mountains, it's Mike Malloy.
Yes, it is Friday, June the 8th, is that right? 2018. Glad you could make it to this edition of the Malloy Podcast. As we are recording the podcast today, Trump has either just arrived for the G7 summit in Canada, or he is about to arrive. And I am glad to see, finally, since that somebody, some world leader, plural, are standing up to this son of a bitch. There is nobody in the Republican Party in this country who has the respect for the U.S. Constitution, the respect for America, the respect for our political system. Not a single goddamn Republican has that kind of respect, to the extent that he or she would tell Trump to go fuck himself and begin operations to get his ass out of office. Not a single Republican, not a member of the House, not a member of the Senate, none of them. And the feckless Democrats who are not in power and will not be after the November election, trust me, they're not doing anything either. They're just wandering around doing their shit. Why is there a Democratic Party in Washington at this time in our history? It is useless. It is functionless. It is doing nothing. Incredible. But French President Macron has taken a stance against this prick. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, they're getting to the point where they've had enough of this fucker. I think it was Macron said, and I think this was today, quote, "The American president may not mind being isolated, but neither do we mind signing a six-country agreement." In other words, they're telling Trump to go fuck himself. I mean, you know, this dictator shit has got to stop. The rest of the world will not put up with it the way we Americans are putting up with it. We are allowing ourselves to sink into the shit with Trump, the anchor, pulling us down. And we're not doing anything. It's astonishing to me. But the rest of the world has just about had enough of this fucker. And, you know, the rest of the world, it appears, has finally realized what some of us in this country have known now for a year and a half or longer. Trump is aligned with Vladimir Putin. They are both fascists. And Trump doesn't give a shit about the rest of the world. The only reason also that Trump is aligned with Putin, because Trump does not do that sort of thing. Trump likes to be the king of the hill. And in the case of Trump, Putin is the king of the hill. And the only reason Trump tolerates it is because he understands that Putin has more shit information on Trump than we Americans could possibly imagine. So no matter what happens, Trump will slice the throats of anybody in our country, anybody in other countries who he feels are getting in his way to become emperor of the United States, except Putin. Our sponsor tonight, Francis, at signsofgold.com. Francis writes, "Hey, Mike, We've just designed four very attractive activist t-shirts, which all truth seekers will really love. They deal with clean energy, the peace movement, Tesla aficionados, and ironic intellectuals. How's that? They're available at signsofgold.com/, or as the British say, stroke, shop now. signsofgold.com/. I like that better. Shop now. So go take a look at what Francis has put up there at their website, signsofgold.com/shop now. Thanks, Francis, several times this evening. The American president may not mind being isolated, but neither do we mind signing a six-country agreement. I love it. I wish there was one, just one goddamn member of the U.S. Congress who had the guts to stand up and say something similar. But every fucking one of them is a coward, especially the Republicans. They're terrified of Trump for fear that Trump will call on his billionaire neo-fascist friends to fund a challenger against any member of Congress, Republican, who stands up against this son of a bitch. And these right-wingers, these billionaire right-wingers, are just more than happy to do it. Because they, by virtue of their wealth, what goes on among us little people doesn't mean shit. It doesn't mean anything. Poverty, disease, unemployment, no health care. They don't give a fuck. They're way above it. My feelings about the mega rich I've made pretty clear on this podcast over the years, but I would go even further at this point and tell you what my feelings are about these billionaires, except for one thing, those cocksuckers at the NSA. Hi, guys, who monitor this program, and they do, and that's not a sign of arrogance on my part. That's because this fucking government doesn't tolerate anybody speaking out. So they just keep their files going until they feel they come and bust your ass. Well, fuck you, NSA. You're not going to get me to say something. But the people who ask know exactly what I mean about what to do with these billionaires. Apparently, Trump and Macron had a phone call. According to CNN, Trump has torched his last real friend. Remember when Macron was here? Young, handsome guy, just like a prime minister, wobbles around with his big gut and his shit attitude. These younger leaders are saying to Trump, you know something, Trump? Your history. Out of our way. And the young, and he's relatively young, leader of China, Premier Xi, or president, whatever the hell title he's got now. They're playing Trump. And they're going to ignore him. They put up with his shit for 15, 16 months now. But these leaders, these newer leaders, who understand that Trump is a dirty, dying, fucking old man who represents the worst aspects of capitalism, which is fascism. And they don't want anything to do with him. So it's good to see people standing up to this monster and telling him what he needs to hear. Go fuck yourself, phony. Go fuck yourself. Now, what are you going to do? Nuke me? Jesus. According to CNN, French President Macron apparently got the full Trump bullshit treatment the other day when he tried in a phone call to level with the one world leader who does not support being leveled with. That's Trump. When Macron tried to talk the truth to Trump. Oh, fuck, give it up. Trump wants nothing to do with the truth. Nothing. The truth, every time Trump comes in contact with it, it devours his fat ass. It tears him to pieces. It fucks up his weird comb over. He can't handle the truth. So Macron, not really, you know, I guess Macron thought, okay, a lot of Trump is just theater. No, what you see with Trump is exactly what you get. He's an incipient little fascist dictator. So anyway, Macron tried to get through to Trump and say, listen, there are a few things that we have got to come to terms with, that you and I and the rest of the Western alliance have got to come to terms with. Macron pointed out there's a succession of battles coming on the trade front, stirred up and caused primarily by Trump. There's Iran's nuclear future. There's migration, global migration, that's occurring in an unprecedented way. And then, of course, there's climate change that the rest of the world acknowledges is a real science-based phenomenon that is occurring and is already at a point where we can't stop it. We can only try to slow it down in the hope that technologies might be developed that could reverse it. But we don't have those technologies now. And Trump and every piece of shit, and they are all pieces of shit, they do not believe in the science. They don't give a fuck. We have become the global outlaw state. We've always been the global aggressive state. Now, at least for the past 120 years, now we are the global outlaw state. CNN reports Trump seems to be flying in solo. Macron, long and apparently reliable wingman, peels off, says, fuck you, Trump, I'm out of here. Reaching a long-awaited, though not unexpected, reconciliation with his principal challenger for European leadership, as it has been forever, Germany and Angela Merkel. Anyway, according to CNN, defaulting to confrontation and pique seems to be how two sources familiar with the recent telephone call between Trump and Macron described it to CNN. How is that even possible? How is that even possible? I mean, France, we talk about the UK, we talk about England being the mother country and so on and so forth. But it was France who came to the defense of the United States when we were fighting for our separation from England. It was France. Trump doesn't know that. He doesn't know a fucking thing. He accused Trudeau, the Canadian prime minister, of that the Canadians torched the White House during the War of 18-something. Right, Trump? You ignorant piece of bullshit. Ah! So the question, and CNN brings it up, what other president of the U.S. could have reacted the way Trump did in the face of frank criticism about what that president was doing to fuck everything up? Only Trump would react the way he did, because he's a pissy little tantrum-throwing 8-year-old. Jesus Christ. And still come out and call his conversation with Macron a win for Trump. Even understand the context. He couldn't comprehend the context that Macron was talking about. And on Sunday, Angela Merkel, according to CNN, gave a long-desired endorsement to one of Emmanuel Macron's pet projects, and that's a joint Germany-France, a joint European military, what's being called intervention force, that could take action anywhere on the planet. And without relying on what European leaders have come to view as an ally who is falling apart, coming apart at the seams, because we have a psychopath leading us, and that's the United States. Trump's America. The rest of the world is looking at this And our enemies are saying, you know, let's just wait. Let's just wait a little longer until Trump so fucks up the United States, then we can make our move. Either against the United States or against U.S. interests around the world. And Trump will not be able to do a thing. Oh, he can order out the military. But maybe the military will say, fuck you, we're not going to go. Maybe. Maybe not, as Trump would say. And CNN reports there are other issues that should be even more troubling for Trump in Angela Merkel's statement last Sunday and Macron's phone call earlier this week. Merkel now sees this joint military force as a way of keeping the UK involved in Europe's defense, and the United States, get the fuck out of the way. We don't want you anymore. Not with your little fascist dictator, comb-over, orange asshole. We don't want you anymore. Go away. How about that? Now, the American firsters, the racist pigs that have so much influence in this country, including these crazy fuckers that run the NRA and all these billionaire right-wingers, you know, they look at this as great. Oh, good! Good! The rest of the world is telling us to fuck off. Come on. Come on, Donnie. Let's build Fortress America. So as the pig would say, we'll wait and see what happens today at the G7 meeting in Canada. Where are they meeting? Ottawa? I don't even know where they're meeting. I mean, right now, here in the East, it's a little past 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And for the past 4 or 5 hours, my Twitter feed has been melting down, as yours probably has, with comment after comment about what this crazy fucker is doing. He is forcing the United States into an isolationist position of the same nature that got the world into World War I and World War II. The trade tariffs, the isolationist policy that was in place when Roosevelt took control of the country, the presidency, is, according to what I've read, one of the major factors that led to the second act of global conflict. The first act being World War I, the second act being World War II, they were one and the same. So between those two acts, 150 million people slaughtered. And Trump, this psycho fucker, is insisting on repeating the same actions that put us there. Only he's doing it more from a Nazi perspective, from a fascist perspective. Trump has no knowledge of history, ancient, modern, recent. He has no idea. Strutting around with his teeny little penis, acting as though he's the king of the fucking world. Well, the rest of the world is getting to the point where they're saying, you know what, Trump, you and your fascism, shove it up your ass. We're not doing it anymore. This is where Trump has taken us in 16 months. Now, on a couple of occasions in my radio career, I have mentioned something that Lawrence Britt, an historian, has examined, and that is the fascist regimes of Hitler's Germany, Mussolini's Italy, Franco's Spain, Suharto's Indonesia, and several Latin American regimes. And as a result of those studies, Britt has discovered there are 14 definite characteristics of fascism. I know you're familiar with them, but I'm going to read them again, okay? Number one, powerful and continuing nationalism. Fascist regimes tend to make constant use of patriotic mottos, slogans, symbols, songs, and other paraphernalia. Flags are seen everywhere, as are flag symbols on clothing and in public display. Now, consider Trump's attack and the way he's worded it on the football players who have knelt during the national anthem as a way of doing two things: continuing to show respect for the flag and the national anthem, which I don't get, but also showing their disdain, the fact that they've had enough of violence against African Americans and the slaughter of young African American men on the street. Remember when Tommy, the 68 Olympics, Tommy, the two black athletes, the runners, who came in first and second. Kathy, you look up for me, black athletes, 68 Olympics. I feel like an idiot. I can't recall. But they stood there on their respective podiums, barefoot, holding their shoes, and raising a fist. Tommy Smith and John Carlos. Thank you. I think Tommy Smith was first, and John Carlos came in second. I think it was 100-meter. Well, that part doesn't matter. But that was a form of protest. Now, it cost those two athletes dearly. Oh, weren't they fucking attacked, especially in this country? They were denied any further competition with whatever governing bodies in the United States decided that raising your fist and bowing your head, not making a statement, just standing there, was just too fucking un-American. I remember seeing that. 68 was a mind fuck of a year. And I remember seeing those two athletes. We didn't see it live. I don't know if there's live telecast from the Olympics or not. Mexico City, I think. But I saw the video, and it brought tears to my eyes. I just thought, Jesus Christ, there are two brave men, two black men who are saying to the racist United States, fuck you. Powerful and continuing nationalism. Number two, disdain for the recognition of human rights. Look what Trump is doing at our southern border. Ripping children away from their parents as a form of punishment. Human rights, these are people who are showing up on our southern border. They're not committing a crime. They're showing up asking for asylum. And at that point, they're taken into detention, and their children, if they have any, are taken from them. What the fuck? Disdain for the recognition of human rights. Because of fear of it, are persuaded that human rights can be ignored in certain cases because of need, the need for protection. The people tend to look away or even approve of torture. Summary executions, assassinations, long incarcerations of prisoners, and so forth. Number three, identification of enemies or scapegoats as a unifying cause. This is how you bring the pissy fucking, in this country, white trash rabble together, by doing this. The people are rallied into a unifying patriotic frenzy over the need to eliminate a perceived common threat or foe. Racial, ethnic, religious minorities, liberal, communist, socialist, etc. Trump is following every fucking one of these. Number four, supremacy of the military. Even when there are widespread domestic problems, the military is given a disproportionate amount of government funding, and the domestic agenda is neglected. Soldiers in military service are glamorized. Trump wants a big fucking parade, and he's going to get it down Pennsylvania Avenue on, 4th of July?
I don't know
either. Number five, rampant sexism. Woo! Fuck me! Running! We have a president of the United States who, if you look up sexism in the dictionary, there's his goddamn picture. The government of fascist nations tend to be almost exclusively male-dominated. Under fascist regimes, traditional gender roles are made more rigid. Think what the Christian so-called church is doing in this country. The fascist Christian church. Think what they're doing. Divorce, abortion, homosexuality are suppressed, and the state is represented as the ultimate guardian of the family institution. Homosexuality repressed. What did the Supreme Court just rule about this cocksucker out in Colorado with his little bake shop? There's more. Hold on just a second. Yeah. This is from Tennessee, right up the road here. A Tennessee hardware store owner is celebrating the Supreme Court's ruling in favor of a bakery that refused to bake a cake for a gay couple's wedding by placing a sign in front of his store that says, "No gays allowed." Jeff Amyx, A-M-Y-X, who owns Amyx Hardware and Roofing Supplies in Granger County, Tennessee, initially posted the sign in 2015 after the Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage, but he later removed it following intense backlash. The sign returned this week after the Supreme Court ruled in favor of a Colorado baker who refused to make the wedding cake for the same-sex couple. Mr. Amyx, Jeff Amyx, this little fascist, he's a Christian. He's a Christian fascist, little fucker that owns this hardware store. He says, Christianity's under attack. Christianity. Because the Supreme Court ruled in favor of a bigoted fuckhead of a baker. Christianity's under attack. This is a great win, don't get me wrong, but this is not the end. This is just the beginning. Right now, we're seeing a ray of sunshine. This is happy days for Christians all over America, he says, but dark days will come. No gays allowed. No Jews allowed. No blacks allowed. No dagos allowed. No dogs allowed. And we wonder about how close fascism has always been in this country. No Muslims allowed. Number six. Controlled mass media. Sometimes media is directly controlled by the government, but in other cases, the media is indirectly controlled by government regulation or sympathetic media spokespeople and executives. Censorship is very common. Now, think in terms, you talk about controlled mass media. Think of every neo-fascist, neo-Nazi media outlet in this country, starting at the top of the shit heap, the Fox sewer. And working your way down to the bottom of the shit heap to outlets like Breitbart and all the levels of the shit heap in between and what they're putting out there for consumption and the fact that millions of Americans are consuming it. Number seven, obsession with national security. Jesus Christ. Everything that Trump does that is negative for the United States, whether it's domestic or foreign, whether it's relationship with our soon-to-be former allies or involvement with our immediate enemies, it doesn't make any difference. Obsession with national security. Think the wall. Fear is used as a motivational tool by the government over the masses. Rapists are coming to this country. Murderers, killers, arsonists, people who jaywalk, drug dealers. That's all Trump talks about. That's what the Christians fear. Number eight, and this is the one that I've been harping on for 30 years. Government and religion become intertwined. Government and religion are intertwined. Government and fascist nations tend to use the most common religion in the nation. In this case, it's this fucked up Christianity, as a tool to manipulate public opinion. Religious rhetoric and terminology is common from government leaders, even when the major tenets of the religion are diametrically opposed. How many times have I said on this program that if these fucking useless, nasty, destructive, so-called Christians would just read what Jesus said according to the Gospels and follow it? But they won't. Because pigs like this Jeffress fucker down in Texas and Hagee and Franklin Graham, these are racist destroyers. They want the world to blow up because their ideology is so sick and twisted that that's the only way they think their Messiah is going to come back to them. This is so fucking bad. I mean, even when the major tenets of the religion are diametrically opposed to the programs that the government puts out there, the government in a fascist state still uses religion. Think Hitler and the Catholic Church. Number nine, corporate power is protected. Think Scott Pruitt. This criminal fucker who Trump continues, oh, he's doing a great job. No, he's not. He's doing a horrible job. He is setting up a ripple effect that's going to kill hundreds of thousands of people, especially children, fetuses. You fucking Christians, you and your fetus bullshit. Here it is. Poisons back into the environment that Obama tried to get out of the environment. And Trump is saying, fuck it, go, go, go. And the chemical industry is saying, yes, yes, yes. And this little son of a bitch, Scott Pruitt, this cheesy little cheap grifter, gets Trump's approval over and over because Pruitt is doing just this, protecting corporate power. The industrial and business aristocracy of a fascist nation often are the ones who put the government leaders into power, creating a mutually beneficial business-government relationship and power elite. Think about the makeup of the last four presidents, two of whom were Democrats. Think of the makeup of their cabinets. And some are worse than others. But look how corporate power has wormed its way into government. It has no fucking business at all being in government. Corporate power, capitalists, and the government should be adversaries. Yes, they should. Because capitalism will destroy every fucking thing that it touches. And government of, by, and for the people, isn't that funny, is the only bulwark against that kind of destruction. Not anymore. Not anymore. Number 10, labor power is suppressed. I don't even have to elaborate on that one, because the organizing power of labor is the only real threat to a fascist government. Labor unions are either eliminated entirely or are severely suppressed. Number 11, disdain for intellectuals and the arts. Do you know that Trump has not once gone to the Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts since he has been, since his campaign began? Not once. How many concerts by accomplished musicians like Yo-Yo Ma have occurred since Trump was president? Not one. He had Kid Rock and Sarah Palin and that shithead that sits on the board of directors for the NRA. Oh, that was fun. Wasn't that fun? Fascist nations tend to promote and tolerate open hostility to higher education and academia. Think Betsy DeVos, an ignorant little piece of right-wing shit who is Secretary of Education, who is attempting to destroy it. It is not uncommon for professors and other academics to be censored or even arrested. Right now, they're under attack. Free expression in the arts and letters is openly attacked. Number 12, obsession with crime and punishment. You know, if anyone has shown an obsession with crime and punishment, it's Trump. Even when the people who are accused of committing the crime were not guilty, did not commit the crime. It doesn't make any difference to this orange fucker. He doesn't care. If Trump had had his way, back in the 90s, 80s, the so-called Central Park gang who attacked a woman and raped her and almost beat her to death, and four or five young black men were arrested and charged with it, and Trump said, execute them now, and then evidence was discovered that showed they were innocent, that someone else did it, and they had the someone else. Didn't mean shit to Trump. Under fascist regimes, the police are given almost limitless power. The people are often willing to overlook police abuses and even forego civil liberties in the name of patriotism. There is often a national police force with virtually unlimited power in fascist nations. Think ICE. Number 13, rampant cronyism and corruption. Oh, Christ. If the Trump administration is anything, it is a filth hole of cronyism and corruption. It's just endless. Fascist regimes almost always are governed by groups of friends and associates and family members who appoint each other to government positions and use government power and authority to protect their friends from accountability. It is not uncommon in fascist regimes for national resources and even treasures to be appropriated or given or even outright stolen by government leaders. And number 14, all of these are critical, but this one strikes at the very heart of what we are supposed to be where it concerns how we select our leaders in this country. Number 14, fraudulent elections. Sometimes elections in fascist nations are a complete sham. Other times, elections are manipulated by smear campaigns against or even assassination of opposition candidates. Think Trump's hero and butt buddy, Putin. Use of legislation to control voting numbers. Think about redistricting. Or political district boundaries, same thing. Manipulation of the media. Think what happened on Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, what's the other one? Instagram. That is media. Those are media. Fuck television. Fascist nations also typically use their judiciary to manipulate or control elections. Now, there you have it. 14 defining characteristics of fascism. How much of it sounds like it's a page taken right out of American contemporary history? All of it. Let's take a break, Kathy. I'll be back momentarily for more fun or frivolity. We have an Uncle Mike story corner coming up, so stick around. I'll be right back. All right, I'm back. I would strongly suggest, and it's only a suggestion, that if you're listening to this program, you go online and in your search engine type in 14 defining characteristics of fascism, print it off, and tape it to your refrigerator. That's what I would suggest. A sponsor tonight is Francis at signsofgold.com. You ought to check out this website. You are going to be amazed and pleased and happy when you see what Francis has. The message, hey, Mike, we just designed 4 very attractive activist T-shirts, which all truth seekers will really love. They deal with clean energy, the peace movement, Tesla aficionados, and ironic intellectuals. I like that one. They're available at signsofgold.com/shop now. Take a look. You really should. signsofgold.com/shop now. Thanks, Francis. Awesome T-shirts. I love awesome T-shirts. It is time for, once again, for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Well, here we are, kiddies, once again, gathering around the electronic campfire here. Well, Uncle Mike shares with you another story from Uncle Mike's Story Corner Library. Oh, it's endless, believe me. Tonight's story is entitled It's Horrendous, The Heartache of a Migrant Boy Taken from His Father. When he landed in Michigan in late May, all the weary little boy carried was a trash bag stuffed with dirty clothes from his days-long trek across Mexico and 2 small pieces of paper, one of them a stick figure drawing of his family from Honduras, the other a sketch of his father, who had been arrested and led away after they arrived at the United States border in El Paso. An American government escort handed over the 5-year-old child, identified on his travel documents as Jose, to the American woman whose family was entrusted with caring for him. He refused to take her hand. He did not cry. He was silent on the ride to his new home. The first few nights, though, he cried himself to sleep. And then it turned into just moaning and moaning, said Janice, his foster mother. He recently slept through the night for the first time, though he still insists on tucking the family pictures, the stick figures, under his pillow. Jose's separation from his father is part of the Trump administration's latest and most widely debated border enforcement policy. Last month, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced that the government would criminally prosecute anyone who crosses the border illegally, a directive that is already leading to the breakup of hundreds of migrant families and channeling children into shelters and foster homes across the United States. The goal, according to administration officials, is to discourage Central American families from making the perilous journey to the southern border of the United States, where they have been arriving in swelling numbers this year to claim asylum. In just the first 2 weeks under Trump's new policy, 638 parents who arrived with 658 children had been prosecuted. Kirsten Nielsen, the Homeland Security Secretary, emphasized that separating families was not the aim, but merely the effect of a decision to step up prosecutions of those who cross the border illegally. At a hearing before the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee, she said, quote, "We do not have a policy to separate children from their parents. Our policy is if you break the law, we will prosecute you." She said the Trump administration is doing a better job than its predecessors in assuring that migrant children are placed with sponsors who are carefully screened. She said, quote, "We can make sure that the children go to people who are actually family members and who are not traffickers and who won't abuse them." End quote. Whether the policy will succeed as a deterrent remains an open question. What is clear is that it is creating heartbreak and trauma for those subjected to it, with parents and children often unaware of one another's whereabouts. Before the so-called zero-tolerance policy was officially announced on May 7th, the Trump administration already had begun prosecuting some parents and sending their children to government shelters. KIND, K-I-N-D, an organization that provides minors with legal counsel, says it is aware of at least six children left behind after their parents were deported, including a two-year-old little girl. In several letters to the Department of Homeland Security, the American Academy of Pediatrics has urged an end to child-parent separation, which researchers have said can cause lifelong trauma in children. When the policy was unveiled, the Academy's president, the American Academy of Pediatrics president, Dr. Colleen Kraft, said she was dismayed at the sweeping cruelty of Trump's program. Jose's last name and that of his foster family, as well as where they live, are not being published in order to protect their privacy. Since his arrival in Michigan, family members said, a day has not gone by when the little boy has failed to ask in Spanish, "When will I see my papa?" They tell him the truth. They don't know. No one knows. Jose's father is in detention, and parent and child until this week had not spoken since they were taken into custody by the United States authorities. Janice, 53, the foster mother, said, quote, "I am watching history happen before my eyes. It is horrendous." Janice, her husband Chris, and their two teenage daughters have firsthand experience with underage migrants. They are among a number of families who have in recent years provided a temporary home called transitional foster care to minors seeking refuge in the United States, usually after fleeing violence and economic uncertainty in Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. In the last 2 years, 12 children, including two sets of siblings, have occupied the room upstairs with its soothing white and light blue walls and twin beds with colorful bedding. All had arrived in the United States alone and remained in this family's care for a few weeks or months until a long-term sponsor, already in the country, often a relative, was identified and cleared by the authorities to receive them. Janice said, quote, "They had access to their parents on a daily basis. They talked to them on the phone. We've done video chats with mom and dad and siblings with every placement, except now." Jose is the first child they have hosted who crossed the border with a parent rather than alone, and then was forcibly separated and left with no ability to contact his papa. On his flight to Michigan were two other Central American little boys in similar circumstances who were placed with families in the area. The majority of youths apprehended at the border of the past several years have been housed in government shelters, and most of them are teenagers who came alone, often expecting to join family members already in the United States. About 11,000 children are currently in these facilities, which are at 95% capacity, according to Kenneth Wolf, a spokesman for the Department of Health and Human Services. On May 10th, 3 days after Mr. Sessions announced the zero-tolerance policy, the government issued a call for proposals from, quote, shelter care providers, including group homes and transitional foster care, end quote, in anticipation of a surge of children separated from their parents who would require housing. In response, Bethany Christian Services, which is coordinating foster placement for about 100 migrant children in Michigan and Maryland, including Jose's, Bethany Christian Services is planning to expand to several other states. Families receive a stipend of about $400 a month to defray the cost of taking care of a child. Chris Paluski, president of Bethany, said, quote, "We don't want to have to ramp up. We would prefer these kids stay with their families. They should not be separated, but being in a loving foster home is better than being on a military base," end quote. Among other children recently fostered by Bethany families is an 18-month-old girl separated from her father, who has been detained. The child cries frequently, especially when she changes settings, such as leaving her foster family's home to attend a doctor's appointment. Donna Abbott, Bethany's Refugees Program Director, said that these newly separated children frequently have nightmares, anxiety, and stomach aches. A 3-year-old boy taken from his mother at the border was inconsolable during his flight to Michigan and cried incessantly on arrival at his new home last month. He recently has begun to bond with his foster mother, from whom he is now reluctant to part. Miss Abbott said, quote, "He seems fearful of losing yet another attachment," end quote. The airport was deserted when Jose landed in Michigan on May 23rd around 12:30 a.m., and it was close to 2 a.m. by the time Janice drove up to the house with him in the back seat of her van. Janice recalled, quote, "He seemed very tired and confused, but he was compliant," end quote. At first, Jose was sad and withdrawn. He did not initiate any interaction with the family, but followed directions from Janice, who speaks basic Spanish, to do things such as wash his hands and come to dinner. Janice said he kept up a little wall. Jose refused to shed his clothes, the ones he had arrived in, an oversized yellow T-shirt, navy blue sweatpants, and a gray fleece pullover, likely given to him by the authorities who processed him in Texas. Janice said, quote, "For 2 days, he didn't shower. He didn't change his clothes. I literally had to peel the socks off his feet. They were so old and smelly. I realized that he didn't want anyone to take anything away from him." End quote. The one thing that animated him, according to Janice, was discussing his photos, which is what he called his little family stick drawings. He introduced mi familia, pointing to the figures of his parents, brother, and younger sister, staring intently at the sketch of his father with a slight mustache and a cap. Jose repeated his name out loud again and again and again. He told Janice one night as he lay in bed, shuffling the pictures, taking turns looking at one and then the other, that it was, quote, "just me and him on the trip from Honduras." Janice said through tears, quote, "he holds onto the two pictures for dear life. It's heart-wrenching," end quote. Janice does not blame Jose's parents for putting him through this ordeal. In early May, she, Janice, traveled to Central America to see for herself the conditions on the ground and returned convinced that gang-fueled violence, extortion, and recruitment of children were compelling parents to make the arduous journey over land with their children to the United States. Janice said, quote, "I have nothing but sorrow and compassion for the families," end quote. When sirens pierced the quiet of the night last week, Jose's eyes widened with fear. "La violencia, la violencia," he said. The family assured him that it was not violence, it was fire trucks. In recent days, the boy began attending a multi-age kindergarten at Bethany with about a dozen other migrant children. A natural athlete, he started playing soccer and catch with Chris and Janelle, the couple's 14-year-old younger daughter. His papa taught him football, he told them. By the beginning of the week, the second week with the family, he cracked some smiles and even allowed himself a few giggles. Janice said, quote, "it's incredibly conflicting for me as a parent to watch this little boy begin to just have fun and experience joy and simple pleasures. His dad doesn't get to see him being joyful. It's as if these moments with his son have been stolen from him. I am no substitute." End quote. For sure, the boy's family always seems to be on his mind. At bedtime one night last week, he said, quote, "I'm going to see my papa on Saturday," end quote. To which Janice responded, "you know, mi amor, I don't think it will be Saturday. First, we have to get more information about where your dad is so that we can call him, and then we'll see," end quote. He listened and then asked her to remain in the room. The little boy said, quote, "I don't want to be alone," end quote. Earlier this week, Jose spoke with his parents for the first time since their lives had diverged. The phone calls were separate. His father remains in detention, and his mother is in Honduras. The calls went smoothly, according to the case manager, but they changed everything. Somehow it had sunk in that there was no way of knowing when he would see his family. Janice said, quote, "it triggered all the separation trauma again," end quote. She tried to offer him toys, but he erupted in anger, screaming and crying at the kitchen table for almost an hour. "It was really hard to watch," said Janice, her voice again breaking. The look on his face was anguish. When his fury subsided, the boy collapsed on the kitchen floor, still sobbing. "Mama, mama, papa," he said over and over. Nearby lay the family pictures, which he had flung on the floor. Another Uncle Mike Story Corner, brought to you by your friends in the Trump administration. We'll see you next time, kiddies. This is us, U.S., us, U.S., United States, us, the land of the free, the refuge, in some cases the last refuge, for people who are desperately, desperately trying to just have a life, or as Trump would call them, rapists, murderers, animals. We've seen this before in a different context. When Jews from Europe, who were finally convinced that the Hitler regime had as one of its objectives the ending of Jews, and they tried to flee, some tried to come to the United States, and they were turned away. We've seen this with Muslims. One of the first things that Trump did when he took office was to attempt to ban Muslims, a religious group, ban Muslims from what? Seven countries from coming to the United States, a directive that was struck down repeatedly by the courts in this country. But it didn't make any difference to Trump. He is such a racist piece of Nazi shit that he didn't care. He just kept having somebody he doesn't write, having somebody rewrite his directive as it was struck down again and again and again. This is this is something that I didn't expect to see in my lifetime. Of course, I had no way of anticipating or even trying to form a scenario in my head about what this country would look like as it became fascist. I've talked about it ever since the Reagan administration. I talked about it during George Herbert Walker Bush. I talked about it during George Bush. I talked about it during the Clinton administration. You know, Bill Clinton was no liberal savior. As a matter of fact, in some instances, he was more of a right-winger than the right-wingers were. But because he had that all shucks attitude, well, I don't know, you know, Hillary and I have, you know, we've always believed. You know, people, a lot of people, most of us bought that shit, didn't we? But I never thought I would live to see it really come to fruition. I thought, okay, there have been books written, there have been articles written. The Plot Against America, the last Philip Roth book that I read, just blew my fucking mind. But I kept telling myself, this is fiction. It couldn't happen here. Who wrote that? It couldn't happen here. That was written in the 30s when there was a huge push by the American industrialists, the American capitalists, to overthrow the government of the newly elected Franklin Roosevelt. Sinclair Lewis. Yeah, it can't happen here. Not it couldn't happen here. It can't happen here. I guess that's one of the weak spots in the human genome that hasn't been eliminated through evolution yet. And that is this insistent desire to be governed in an autocratic way. People who are religionists, I don't care what religion, accept that kind of fascism. Because in religion, religion is fascism. There's one person, an invisible deity who makes the rules. And there's no way to get the rules changed. And if you don't follow the rules, you are going to suffer the worst imaginable shit that the human mind can come up with. But there's no recourse. There's no appellate court, as it were. Now, the Christians will give you a way out. Oh, yeah, well, you know, once you repent, there's redemption right around the corner and you're home free. But every single religion is structured along the same lines as fascism. The denigration of women. The refusal to believe things outside what the religious leader teaches inside the church, the synagogue, the temple, the mosque. The argument can be made that political fascism is not as bloody as religious fascism, but it's still bloody. And I think that Hitler showed that political fascism could be as murderous as religious fascism. But Hitler got a lot of his information and his templates from the United States. Like I mentioned last night, Hitler was a big fan of what the United States did to the native population here. Tens of millions of people slaughtered. Entire tribes or nations, if you will, that were just butchered. Men, women, children, babies, butchered. And then what the capitalists did to black people here, Africans. So when I sit here and condemn the Nazis for their slaughter of innocents, I have to remind myself that as horrifying as the Holocaust was, it certainly was not unique in human history in the destruction of, or the attempted destruction of, an entire group, religion, class, race of people. We've done that, we being the human species, have done it over and over and over and over again. This country is heading in that direction. One more item here about the Dreamers, about the kids who were brought here as kids and have lived here all their lives. there's this kid, Manuel Antonio Cano Pacheco. This is from the Des Moines Register newspaper. This kid should have graduated high school in Des Moines last month. He's the oldest of four siblings, and he should have walked across the stage, cap and gown, to become a proud symbol to his sister and brothers of the rewards of hard work and education here in the United States. But instead of that happening, Manuel, however you want to say it, died a brutal death alone in a foreign land, a symbol of gang supremacy in a country plagued by violent drug cartels. It happened 3 weeks after U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, the forerunner to a national police force, ICE returned him to Mexico, a country he had left at age 3, when his parents brought him here without a visa. The fact that America was the only home that this kid knew made Manuel eligible to apply for and be granted DACA, status, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. That's a program initiated by Barack Obama that Trump has shredded. DACA exempted him from deportation and from other young people, referred to as dreamers, who were brought to the United States by their parents when they were little, children, babies. Now, that status, the DACA status, didn't protect Manuel when he came to immigration authorities' attention after being stopped for speeding last fall. An ICE spokesperson, ICE being the precursor, the forerunner to what is going to become Trump's national police force, kind of like the brown shirts in Germany. An ICE spokesperson said in a statement that a federal immigration judge terminated this boy's DACA status because of two misdemeanor convictions. The ICE statement also says that Manuel wasn't technically deported. He was returned to Mexico under escort by ICE deportation officers under a voluntary departure process that does not carry the penalties of formal deportation. Oh, well, thank Jesus and all the angels for that. But the kid is still dead, where he will remain. Here's an excerpt from the statement from Sean Neudauer, ICE public affairs officer. Quote, in April 2017, ICE officers arrested Cano Pacheco at the Polk County Jail in Iowa following his conviction on a misdemeanor drug charge. Possession of marijuana? About the same time, Cano Pacheco was also convicted on a separate misdemeanor charge in Polk County. ICE issued Cano Pacheco a notice to appear before a federal immigration judge based on his criminal convictions, two misdemeanors, including speeding Cano Pacheco was convicted. On April 10th, 2018, Cano Pacheco requested and was granted voluntary departure, quote, under safeguards, end quote, by a federal immigration judge. He returned to Mexico at the border in Laredo, Texas, under ICE escort April 24th. Well, okay, that's the end of that story, right? Little pot-smoking son of a bitch who drove his car too fast. Well, out of here, bro. And he left under voluntary departure. Yeah. At a small memorial service for Manuel June 3rd in Des Moines, at the Trinity Las Americas Church, Juan Verduzco, 20 years old, recalled the friend he made freshman year at the high school. Manuel was always smiling and upbeat, never had an unkind word for anyone, Verduzco said in an interview. Quote, he was never a person you would feel bad for, end quote. But what happiness, that happiness, had given way to depression after Manuel's father was sent to prison for drug offenses for 3 years, according to the friend, Verduzco. Quote, he got into really bad depression, end quote. Noting some bad habits Manuel was sinking into, like drinking, Verduzco said, quote, things were going downhill. I didn't know what to do about it, end quote. It wasn't just that Manuel had lost his role model and the father he always looked up to, but that he now felt responsible for being the man of the family. That meant helping to support the family, which meant transferring from East High School to Scavo, where he could work into his schedule while being employed installing floors. In the midst of all that upheaval, Manuel's girlfriend had his baby, now a year old little boy. Both his friend, Verduzco, and Manuel's mother said Manuel was passionate for car mechanics and was attending courses on that particular subject at Des Moines Central Campus. Verduzco said, quote, he told me he had a scholarship to a college in Chicago for mechanics. Instead, a GoFundMe account recently helped pay for his funeral in Mexico. In Zacatecas, Mexico, Manuel had gone out to get food with an acquaintance of his cousin's, who apparently was known to the killers, Verduzco said. Quote, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time, end quote. Both were killed. Manuel died because his throat had been slit. The northwestern Mexican state of Zacatecas, where Manuel's family came from, has reportedly become a deadly place, especially for young people. Last August, the bodies of 14 people were discovered buried in a mass grave there. The growing number of drug war deaths make Mexico one of the most dangerous countries in the world, according to the International Institute for Strategic Studies. Between January and May of 2017, the Mexican Attorney General's office reported 12,238 homicides between January and May. What's more, according to the Dallas Morning News, deportees are especially targeted by gangs in certain border areas. They are held by their captors unless the relatives in the U.S. pay thousands of dollars for their release. Between January and June 2017, the U.S. deported more than 31,000 Mexicans through two of the most dangerous crossing points, according to Mexico's Immigration Service. Yes, Manuel was responsible for his own actions when he broke the law during a traumatic time by driving under the influence. Verduzco said, quote, I think most of this is because of his dad. That's when his college stuff, his dreams went down the drain, end quote. More than anything, Manuel's brief life and gruesome death are yet another reminder of the heartlessness and counterproductiveness of our immigration policies and practices which cry out for reform. Verduzco said the loss of his friend, who was more like a brother, is something, quote, I kind of don't believe it. It still hasn't hit me. I don't understand, end quote. Nor should any of us understand or accept it. We should advocate for the system to be changed. That's from the Des Moines Register opinion column by Rekha Basu. She has a book out. Let's take a break, Kathy. We'll be back momentarily. Boy, today has turned into horror story day so far, right? I'll be right back. Hey, I saw this on a tweet from a very reliable source. Trump is coming out for relaxed standards on asbestos production when we're right in the middle of a mesothelioma epidemic, apparently, in this country. But Trump wants the restrictions on a lot of things taken down to zero. But where it concerns asbestos, guess who makes most of it? 58% of the world's asbestos supply comes from Russia. Oh, goddamn. him. You talk about a Russian agent. This orange son of a bitch is a Russian agent in the worst sense of that word. Oh, I thought this was pretty weird. There's a guy named Ralph Peters. He was a regular on Fox News. He has quit in disgust. He's a retired Army lieutenant colonel. And he said that Fox's attacks on democratic institutions do, quote, a great grave disservice to our country, end quote. In other words, this former lieutenant colonel, who had no problem being there for a number of years, 10 years he was on Fox, now is accusing them of treason. I mean, that's what it is. When you do a great grave disservice to the country, you're committing treason. I don't care how it's worded. He appeared on Fox News to offer military analysis and insight. He was one of Fox Network's reliably conservative commenters, but he quit in disgust. He announced his departure in a blistering farewell to his colleagues, the other sewer dwellers at that fucking place, followed up on Wednesday, yesterday, with another searing attack, saying that Fox was, quote, doing a great grave disservice to our country. That's what I just quoted him saying. He's a retired lieutenant colonel, United States Army, and he spoke on CNN in his first television interview since his departure. He actually left in March. He just kind of kept quiet about it, and certainly Fox wasn't going to say anything. Peters said this, quote, with the rise of Donald Trump, Fox did become a destructive propaganda machine, and I don't do propaganda for anyone. Well, what did you do for 10 years, Colonel? I mean, I'm glad that you finally have identified the fucking plank in your eye as something that shouldn't be there, perhaps. But let's not get all holier than thou when you say, I don't do propaganda for anyone. The fuck you don't. You did propaganda for Fox for 10 years. And I don't care what position you took. You were working for a propaganda machine whose sole function and purpose is to destroy the underpinning institutions of this country so that it can be replaced, all of them can be replaced by Trump fascism. So I'll tell you what, Colonel Peters, go cry in somebody else's beer. You're the one that fucked up, pal. If you finally discovered through what, a flash of insight, that you were working for a propaganda organization?
I want to say something.
You want to say something.
Yeah, just because, I was thinking about this last night, I couldn't sleep. And I was after the show, and I was browsing through some of the repeat shows that they have on the ABC networks, you know, the Alphabet networks. And I was flipping around, and I ended up on Tucker Carlson, the repeat from last night. And you said Wednesday as yesterday. Yesterday was Thursday, just so you know.
Right.
Just, I don't want anybody to think they're listening to the wrong podcast. Today is Friday the 8th.
Okay.
Anyway.
I'm not perfect.
No, I know. I just wanted to correct the record. So Fox, Tucker had on this Democratic senator, and God help me, I can't remember his name. He's on MSNBC all the time. I know you know who he is. I'm having another hot flash moment. He's the one that talks like this. He's got, you know, just a real distinctive voice. And he says, Trump's just a killer. Yeah.
He's a senator.
Yeah. You know who I'm talking about. Anyway, and he was, which I stopped because I was surprised that he was on Fox. I thought, oh, Lord, I've only ever seen him on MSNBC. And Tucker, he was talking. And as soon as the guy said, and this is not Slalwell, but it's someone like him, but older. As soon as the representative or senator said, you know, well, what I'm most upset about, Tucker, is that they have this, you know, the FBI knew for months and months that Trump was under investigation for the Russians and they never let out the information. And that should have been public knowledge if Hillary's emails were under, you know. And Tucker says, it's just a barrage of words. I don't even know what you're saying. You're not making any sense. And then he muted the guy's mic and they switched off to another guest. just, it was unbelievable. So they're right out just saying, you know, I don't even know what you're saying. It's just a wall of words.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. It's like they literally just deny when facts are presented. They just say, you're just all, and that, oh, he's from Minnesota. I know this. The guy's from Minnesota because he said, maybe good luck in the next elections. Maybe the folks in Minnesota can understand what you're talking about. We can't. And it was unreal. And every time now, I mean, forget Sean Hannity. He's so down the rabbit hole, it doesn't even matter. But with the exception of maybe Tucker Carlson, any time I just, out of curiosity, morbid curiosity, flip over to Fox, anytime there is any voice that says, hey, you know, the Department of Justice had real and valid reasons for opening an investigation into the Trump-Russia connections during the campaign, and if they had an informant, that informant was placed or placed himself and became an informant, again, completely legally and completely legitimately, because don't we want to know if, I mean, this is the thing that the rule of law Republicans kill me on. All of a sudden, they're all Russia-files. And they don't give a damn about, you know, our Department of Justice anymore. But don't we want to know, just bottom line, if there's, like Trey Gowdy says, if there's interference in our elections by a foreign entity, don't we want the Department of Justice to look into that? Anyway, I'll look up this guy's name because it's driving me crazy.
As far as Tucker Carlson, he reminds me of one of the little French weasels who, when the Germans invaded and took over France, Tucker Carlson would have been one who immediately applied for and got a position with the Vichy government, the government that moved from Paris to Vichy France, and became the puppets of the Nazis. Tucker is that kind of slimy little weasel who, when Paris was liberated, they would have grabbed Tucker, the French people, shaved his head the way they did with the female collaborators, with the Nazis, shaved Tucker's head and beat him until there was nothing left except a mass of bloody pulp lying on the Champs-Élysées or someplace. But that's what Tucker reminds me of. He's a greasy little weasel kind of traitor. Hannity, on the other hand, is an upfront, commits upfront treason every fucking night that he's on. Hannity would have been, if Hannity would have been in France when the Germans invaded, he wouldn't have become part of the Vichy government. What Hannity would have done was insisted to the German high command that he, Hannity, be given an officer's commission and turn loose on the dirty fucking cowards in France. There's a difference between Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity. I don't understand those two white boys. I really don't. They have every fucking thing that a person in a media-saturated society like ours, in a money-freaked-out country like ours, money, media, if it's not on television, it doesn't exist. If you can't afford trips to Italy every other weekend, you're shit. I mean, that's where the United States is for that top 0.1%, among which dwell Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity. But I can never, and Rush Limbaugh, you know who I'm talking about. But I can't figure out why people like that, like Hannity and Tucker, why they are so willing to commit treason against your own country, to fucking refuse to see the truth, even when it punches them right in the fucking forehead. They still won't see it. Or like Kathy just said, Tucker Carlson will say, well, you're just making a barrage of words. We're going to move on. What is it about these white boys? And they're always white, with one exception, Dinesh D'Souza, who thinks he's white. But all these white boys, I won't call them men, Trump's one of them, and Giuliani, who take pleasure in doing what these filthy bastards accuse liberals of tearing this country down, of ripping it to pieces, of undermining every single institution that the framers tried to put together, hypocrites though they were, that could be used in a way to bring this country to what the documents said it should be. We hold these truths to be self-evident, yada, yada, yada. We've never been there. But it's because we've had slime like Tucker Carlson and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity along the way, along the 270-year, whatever it's been, since the founding of this country, who have insisted on tearing it down. Why? What is it about these rich, sniveling white boys, these little snapping turtles, these little, I don't know how else to describe them, swine, scum. What is it about them that they can't just go ahead and enjoy all the riches they put together from tearing the country down and just shut the fuck up, go spend the rest of their lives, go someplace where you'd be happy, and get out of the country? I don't get that. Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity, I can't include Limbaugh because Limbaugh is such a bloated, obese, ugly person. But Hannity and Tucker Carlson have all the accoutrement of a successful 2018 American. They have the money. They have the media platform. They have the connections. They can do any fucking thing they want to do, so they spend their time ripping the shit out of the country and the people who are trying to put the country back together. And they broadcast lies after lies after lies. What is it with these sick white devils that they do this? That's something I've been trying to figure out for an awful long time. It started with Limbaugh. I could never figure out why Limbaugh was always denigrating everything good about this country. The only things that Limbaugh would shore up would be the bullshit, fascist bullshit that he believed in. He didn't even skip a beat when the son of a bitch was almost busted for being involved in a conspiracy to get drugs. He sent his housekeeper out on the fucking streets of Miami to score pharmaceuticals for him, illegal pharmaceuticals. That's when Limbaugh was gobbling oxycodone. What a miserable son of a bitch. Limbaugh, Hannity, Tucker Carlson, all of them. Oh, Richard Painter. He's a former the guy that Kathy was talking about. He's a former ethics in charge of ethics during the Bush administration, which I always found to be funny as hell. He's a conservative, and he's not an office holder. He's running for office. Right. He's running for a congressional seat or a Senate seat in
he's running for Al Franken's
old seat. But let's not confuse. See, this is the thing that's happened. Trump is such a piece of shit that even the conservatives, who are too far to the right for me, they're not quite fascistic, but they're too far to the right. Richard Painter will go on MSNBC at the drop of a hat and just rip the shit out of Trump and his whole administration. But let's remember where Richard Painter came from. He came out of the ethics division department of the Bush administration. Ethics? Bush and Cheney? When? Katrina? Invasion of Iraq? Oh, Christ, I get tired of it. Kathy, if you don't mind, if you could hit the music machine for one more break here. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with me.
I want to stay with you. I don't want to play with you. I
want signsofgold.com. signsofgold.com. Francis's message. Hey, Mike, we just designed four very attractive activist T-shirts, which all truth seekers will really love. They deal with clean energy, the peace movement, Tesla aficionados, and ironic intellectuals. And they're now available at their website, signsofgold.com/shop now. Okay? signsofgold.com/shop now. So go ahead and take a look. This sounds really cool. I mean, even if you don't buy something, go take a look. See what Francis has. Sounds very, very, very appealing to me. Anyway, thanks, Francis. We here at the Molloy Podcast deeply appreciate your sponsorship, and I mean that. Finally tonight, I guess this is finally tonight. On CNN's program New Day, there was a they had a big laugh this morning over some weird details surrounding Scott Pruitt's use. The EPA had Pruitt's use of his security staff to run errands for him. I'm out of toilet paper. Go get me some Vaseline. I need a new brush. You know, that kind of shit. Now, Pruitt continues to be buried under a mountain of ethics and improper spending controversies. But here's a new one. Pruitt had his security team pick up his dry cleaning and help him hunt down his favorite body lotion, which is usually only found at Ritz-Carlton hotels, by the way. The host of this program, John Berman on CNN, was incredulous when he brought up the story this morning, asking his colleagues, when does dry skin become a security risk? Berman asked, is it just dry skin? Is it cracked skin? Chafed skin? When does the security detail get involved? Now, Chris Saliza has pointed out that between this, Pruitt's Chick-fil-A dealings, and everything else, it's amazing that he still has his job at all. But no, it isn't. I would disagree with my former, well, they're not my colleagues. I worked there before they did a long time ago. But I would disagree with that point of view. It's not a surprise. It shouldn't be amazing that Scott Pruitt still has his job. He is doing exactly what Trump and the right-wing capitalist slime in this country want him to do. He is ripping to pieces every single regulation put together by the past three presidents that involve the health and well-being of us, the citizens. So, you know, Trump's never going to fire this piece of shit. There's 16 separate investigations being conducted about this bastard right now. And of all the investigations being conducted, I don't know how many of them are under the control of these devils, the Republicans, or worse, the Republican Christians. But whatever the number is, they're not going to convict him. They're not going to do anything to him. He is doing what Bannon talked about, the deconstruction of the regulatory state. Sounds absolutely Leninist, doesn't it? The deconstruction of the regulatory state. So as long as Pruitt continues to use his meat axe on everything that was designed over the years to make the quality of our lives better, as long as he keeps destroying all that, who's going to fire him? Trump? Who's going to demand that he resign? Capitalist America? Oh, please, fucking please. Oh, my God. The billionaires, the donor class, as Bob Alexander pointed out last night in his moment with Bob, the donor class, which for the Republicans now is just a seething mass of billionaires who are intent on destroying the underpinnings of this country and turning most workers into slaves, because that's fun. That's fun for these rat fuckers. I want to tell you billionaires something. The day will come, trust me, just like in the French Revolution, the day will come when the noise you hear will be the wheels turning on the tumbrils as these guillotines are taken to the county square. All right, that's it from us for this week. What a week. I'll see you Monday. In the meantime, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, yes. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. And
good night, Kathy.
Say good night, Kathy.